What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Chinese economic activity worsens across the board. Plus, with foreign funds slow to arrive, Ukraine scrapes by to finance its war.
The broader concern for Ukraine is that the West's political attention span might be limited and that the amount of political energy and resources and commitment might be fading as time passes.
And Americans are splurging on summer travel and entertainment, but can it last? It's Monday, August 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Economic growth in China slowed across all fronts in July, according to new data released today. That data showed declines in the speed of growth in retail sales, a fallback in growth of industrial production, and a steep decline in new home prices. Youth unemployment also increased to nearly 20%. China's central bank responded to the data by unexpectedly cutting interest rates, but Journal reporter Jason Douglas says that spurring growth will be a challenge.
What's happening is the Chinese central bank is kind of pushing on a string. There's no demand really from consumers and businesses for loans, and that's proving very difficult then for the Chinese central bank to boost the economy by getting people to borrow.
Meanwhile, Japan's economy has recovered to its pre-pandemic size, thanks to strong consumer spending and higher exports, though inflation may start to weigh on growth later this year. That is according to new data that showed the world's third largest economy expanding by 0.5% in the April to June quarter. Economy Minister Daishiro Yamagiwa said Monday he expects growth to continue, but is concerned about global trends, including rising energy and food prices, monetary tightening in the U.S., and the uncertain course of the pandemic. A bipartisan delegation of U.S. lawmakers is in Taiwan. The two-day trip is expected to center on U.S.-Taiwan relations, regional security, global supply chains, and climate change. The visit is likely to rekindle tensions after China encircled the island with live-fire military drills in response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit earlier this month. In protesting the visit, a spokesman for the Chinese embassy in Washington said that the U.S. had spared no effort to stir up confrontation between Beijing and Taipei. And turning to the U.S., authorities have yet to establish a motive for Friday's stabbing attack of novelist Salman Rushdie in southwestern New York. According to Chautauqua County District Attorney Jason Schmidt, authorities have not concluded whether the 24-year-old attacker, who has been charged with second-degree attempted murder, did so in connection with a fatwa or religious edict that had been issued more than 30 years ago by the then-Iranian leader Ayatollah Khomeini that called on Muslims to kill Rushdie. Rushdie's family said Sunday that he remains in critical condition but is talking and showing signs of improvement. A range of companies that cater to leisure time reported strong results last week as Americans splurge on summer travel and entertainment. Hotel chains said that tourists are shelling out top dollar for rooms, while cruise lines posted records in onboard spending. Theme parks also said sales per visitor hit historic highs, while Las Vegas casinos reported a surge in slot machine gambling. Journal reporter Will Feuer has been tracking these trends, and he joins us now with more. Hey, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Besides people just feeling a little cooped up and wanting to go on a trip, what are we really seeing here?
Yeah, so aside from the pent-up demand that I think we're all feeling and know is out there, it's also that we're seeing the pull-down of pandemic restrictions, the last lingering ones, really. And beyond that, what's really surprising here is that even as the costs go up, the cost of hotels being at record levels, and inflation and all sorts of the lifestyles, you know, affecting the pocketbook, people are still spending more than ever to stay at these places and just travel all over, you know, to Europe, to the U.S., to go out to theme parks, cruise lines, everything.
And how are consumers spending their money during their vacations?
Yeah, so the really interesting thing here is that we can't quite say that more people are traveling than ever, attendance levels at some of these places are still below pre-pandemic levels even. But the interesting thing is that the people who are traveling and who are going to these places are spending more per person than ever. And the CEO of Cedar Fair, which is a regional theme park chain, he said something really interesting, which was that people are choosing the brisket, not the burger. We saw the same thing from Norwegian Cruise Line, where they said that they saw highest ever onboard per capita spending.
Okay, so the sun is shining. Companies within entertainment and hospitality are making hay. But is this sustainable?
Yeah, that's really the question. And if you talk to the hotel executives and a lot of the other travel executives, they basically all insist that, yes, the consumer is strong, that this is sustainable. People are not taking travel for granted anymore after the pandemic, and 2023 is going to be a repeat of this summer. However, I spoke with Trivago CEO Axel Heffer, who really was the only executive in the travel industry who I've heard really cast some doubt on that. And he basically said that this summer is unique, that people, for example, have been promising their kids for years now that they're going to take them to Disneyland, and at some point, they actually have to take them to Disneyland. But that doesn't mean they're going to go to Disneyland every summer from here on out. So as soon as they make their 2022 summer vacations and they get back, they make their next decision about 2023 summer in a totally different environment. They look around, they see costs going up, inflation is still surging, economic growth is slowing. They still might travel, but whether they're going to really go to these expensive vacations and opt for the add-ons and the luxury offerings, that's yet to be seen.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Will Feuer. Will, thanks.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll get an update from Ukraine, where mounting economic challenges are testing the government's ability to pay its bills and forcing it to print money. That story after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
On the battlefields of Ukraine, the country's defense against Russia's invasion is gradually strengthening. But back in the capital, Kyiv, officials in the Ministry of Finance are struggling to make ends meet. Journal reporter Marcus Walker is in Kyiv, where he's been learning about the lengths to which Ukraine is having to go to get by financially. And he joins us now with the latest. Marcus, thanks for being with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us about Ukraine's books these days. How are they looking?
Well, the starting point is that the Russian invasion has caused a massive economic crash through the destruction and the occupation of a large swathe of Ukraine's east and south, which is much of its industrial heartland and much of its most important agricultural regions, and of course the blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea ports, all of which means that the Ukrainian economy is struggling to breathe. It had a disastrous collapse this spring. It is showing some signs of stabilization at a depressed level, but the problem for the government means that tax revenues are very weak at a time when spending, of course, is much, much higher than normal because fighting a war against Russia is an expensive business.
And so where does this all sort of net out in terms of revenue in and money out?
Before Russia's invasion, Ukraine had a roughly balanced budget, and the war has really destroyed its public finances. Tax revenues cover less than 40% of government spending at the moment. So that's a massive budget deficit every month. And military spending is over 60% of total public spending. They've cut everything else to the bone, really. They've halted everything that isn't essential. They have to keep hospitals and schools operating and the general government functioning and pay pensions. That's about it. But the war costs, that is paying soldiers' salaries and buying weapons and ammunition, all of that is a huge burden. And the deficit really is an enormous problem every month.
So besides cutting spending to the bone, as you describe it, what else is Ukraine doing to address this financial crunch?
So the government, first of all, reached an agreement with Western governments this spring. And the US and the European Union, Canada, the UK and some others agreed to help Ukraine with its normal civilian budget costs so that Ukraine can then use its tax revenues and other resources to defend the country. Unfortunately, the amount of money pledged by Western governments wasn't enough to cover the gap, and the amount that those countries are actually delivering falls a long way short of the pledges. So there is a very large hole there that the government is having to cover. Now, there's not much they can do about that with tax revenues depressed. So the only option that's left is the central bank has to print money to buy government bonds. And really, Ukraine is fighting this war while printing money to pay soldiers' salaries. It's a situation they're worried about because this is pushing up inflation. And the risk is that even while they're gradually strengthening on the battlefield, they're in danger of destabilizing the currency and suffering a financial crisis.
So tell us more about that foreign financial aid, Marcus. Why is it falling so far short of what had been pledged?
Throughout the war, we've seen Western governments make big promises but then act on them rather slowly. It's the same on arms deliveries, and it's definitely the case on money. Now, Ukrainian officials say that the US and the UK are more or less sending what they pledged they would, but the European Union in particular is being very, very slow. And the EU money seems to have been jammed up in a long argument between the European Commission and Germany over how exactly this should be financed and how the burden should be distributed between different countries. This is a typical EU debate. And the Ukrainians are saying, we don't have time. You know, we're in a war. We need to act quickly. And as an advisor to President Zelensky told me, if we made decisions this slowly, the Russians would be at the Polish border by now. I think the broader concern for Ukraine is that the West's political attention span might be limited and that the amount of political energy and resources and commitment to helping out with arms and with money might be fading as time passes. Russia is very much counting on Western attention fading. It's counting on support, financial and military, tapering off over time and into next year. So Ukraine is very much agitated about that possibility. Even as it's gradually getting stronger on the battlefield, it's doing all it can to make the West remember and understand that this is going to be a long war. The war and the economy are both dependent on each other. The stronger the economy, the more the government can afford to finance the war. And the better the fighting goes from Ukraine's point of view, the better that is for economic stabilization.
Okay, so lots of challenges there going forward, but it sounds like there has been some good news for Ukraine's finances lately, no?
Ukraine had some good news this month. It has managed to persuade its international bondholders to vote for a proposal to restructure all of its bonds. Effectively, Ukraine will have nothing to pay for the next 2 years until September 2024, and that will save the Ukrainian government about $6 billion. Now, that's only a little over 1 month's financing shortfall, but every little bit helps right now. The Ukrainian government has sent the IMF a proposal for a loan program, and that would help not only in terms of getting some loans from the IMF, but Kyiv thinks that the credibility of an IMF program would also be a signal of IMF confidence in Ukraine's finances. But in the middle of a war, it's extremely difficult to predict military spending, military fortunes, how the battlefield will develop, and all of those things will determine how Ukraine's economy fares. So this is a very unusual situation, and we'll see if the IMF is able to find a positive answer.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Marcus Walker reporting from Kyiv, Ukraine. Marcus, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure.
And finally, there is a new trend taking off among Gen Z professionals, both on TikTok and at the office, and it's called quiet quitting. The point here isn't about getting off the company payroll, like quitting might imply. Rather, it's about staying on the payroll, but rejecting hustle culture and focusing time on the things you do outside of the office. WSJ careers reporter Lindsay Ellis explains why so many young workers are rallying behind the idea.
Some of the young people I talked to who entered the workforce during the pandemic were really starting to feel a drain, which they said stemmed from the lack of boundaries between work and life. And I think part of this is rebuilding those boundaries or building them if they never worked really with them in the past. I mean, this sense that, okay, in order to be at your best at work, you must be pulling all-nighters and going above and beyond. They really are saying, this is not something that I want. That how they perform at work is not what's going to define them.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We will be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.